Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee to order. A couple of quick items. We need to reapprove the minutes of March 14th. I made a slight error in calling it the 30th meeting instead of the 29th. So we need to reapprove that.
I don't know. We might want to talk about it.
Representative Atkins, would you like to go to the testifiers table?
I noticed.
Representative Atkins, have you had a moment to look at those March 14th meeting minutes again?
Indeed I have, but I wasn't here for the meeting, so I might not be the ideal guy.
We'll go back to Representative Koznick.
I move to approve the minutes.
Representative Koznick moves the meeting minutes of the 29th meeting of March 14th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Those minutes are passed. And Representative Koznick, how about the meeting minutes of March 16th? Representative Koznick moves the minutes of March 16th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Those minutes are also passed. Thank you very much. And now we have members, we will be going to our presentation today. We have Mark Danaski from DPS here with us. We'll start with DPS, and Mr. Danaski, will you state your name for the committee, please, and proceed?
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Mark Danaski. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. I have with me Larry Freund, who's our CFO.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, members, for allowing us to come before you today. I'm going to go over, I believe it's pages 6 through 19 of the Trunk Highway Report. Submitted on behalf of the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Transportation. As many of you know, the Department of Public Safety has 9 operational divisions. We have the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the Driver and Vehicle Services Division, the Emergency Communication Networks Division, the Minnesota State Patrol, the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, the Office of Justice Programs, the Office of Traffic Safety, and the State Fire Marshal's Office, which includes the Office of Pipeline Safety and the Board of Firefighter Training and Education. The department also has 4 divisions that provide human resource, fiscal services, internal affairs, and communication support for the department. The Department of Public Safety receives federal funds, state general funds, trunk highway funds, highway tax distribution funds. The divisions within our department that rely on trunk highway funds and the highway user distribution funds include the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Driver and Vehicle Services Division, the Minnesota State Patrol, the Office of Traffic Safety, and our administration and related services.
Mr. Janask, if I could pause for this one, and I apologize to members. We kind of just jumped into this. This is a report that we wanted to talk about some of the detailed expenditures that came out of the Trunk Highway User Fund, and this is something Senator Dibble was concerned about as well, so he actually initiated this. So we're all a little bit concerned about the dollars that we expect to go to roads and bridges, and that's why we're talking about this in a detailed level. So I apologize for that pause, but now, members, we're on track here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll go back again just for the members to clarify. Of the 9 divisions that we have within the Department of Public Safety, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, Driver and Vehicle Services, the Minnesota State Patrol, the Office of Traffic Safety, and some of our administrative and related services rely on trunk highway funds and the highway tax distribution funds. And I'll walk through each of those separately here for you now. Trunk highway fund expenditures for the BCA are identified on pages 8 and 9. The funding appropriated to the BCA Forensic Science Service and the Trunk Highway Fund is used for DWI-related laboratory expenses to improve the safety on state's highways. BCA services include analysis of urine and blood samples for alcohol and drugs and the administration of the Minnesota Breath Testing Program. page 10 identifies HUDD funds used through fiscal year 2015 by the Department of Vehicle Services. PVS has used HUTD funds to purchase, deliver, and mail license plates, registration stickers, and registration notices. During last year's legislative session, DVS was directed to stop using HUTD funds for license plates and instead use funds from the Vehicle Services account. However, for FY 18 and 19, the base appropriation from the HUTD is reestablished with PVS. Page 11 shows trunk highway funds expended by the Office of Traffic Safety. OTS supports programs to reduce traffic fatalities and serious injury crashes. The office provides funding to support public education and outreach, traffic enforcement, and policy development. In 2015, the Trunk Highway Fund appropriation of $384,000 was used as a required state match to secure federal funds in excess of $10 million. Pages 12, 13, and 14 outline expenditures by the Minnesota State Patrol. The primary mission to the State Patrol is to provide for the safe, efficient movement of traffic on Minnesota's roadways. Trunk highway and highway user tax distribution funds are currently appropriated to two primary areas within the State Patrol. They are patrolling highways and commercial motor vehicle enforcement. The State Patrol's primary role is the enforcement of laws regulating the use of Minnesota's roadways, with special emphasis on removing impaired drivers, encouraging seatbelt use, ensuring safe speed, and enforcing distracted driving laws. Additionally, the patrol investigates motor vehicle crashes and assists motorists on the roads. The goal of the State Patrol's Commercial Vehicle Division is to reduce the number of commercial vehicle crashes through enforcement and education, as well as to reduce damage to roadways caused by overweight trucks. Pages 15 through 18 identify trunk highway and HUTD expenditures in the area of administration-related services of DPS. And on page 19, it shows an annual legislatively directed transfer of funds among the HUTD fund, Trunk Highway Fund, and General Fund. On page 15, you'll see an overview of all funds expended in the administrative and related services for the Department of Public Safety. In addition to Trunk Highway and HUTD funds, the Department's central services rely on general fund funding, federal funding, and other special revenue.
Mr. Janeski, we do have a question. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just moving really fast there, so I wanted to keep up. But on State Patrol, back on page 12, just for my information, what line are the vehicles, the purchase of vehicles, where does that show up?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the purchase of State Patrol squads?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Representative,
it should be under the supply line or capital equipment.
All right.
Representative Runbeck.
Supplies. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that's like the third biggest number, so that kind of makes sense. But it wasn't obvious with the being called supplies. Thank you.
Please continue, Mr. Janeski.
We're up through the transfer of funds. Page 15 gives an overview of all the fund expenditures in the administration-related services. As I mentioned, in addition to Trunk Highway and HUTD, Central Services does get general fund funding, federal funding, and other special revenue funding. Page 16 shows expenditures for operational support that includes the Commissioner's Office, Internal Affairs, Affirmative Action, our Fiscal Administrative Services, and our Human Resources Department. Page 17 identifies the Trunk Highway Fund expenditure of the DPS Office of Communications, which provides public information, promotes traffic safety initiatives, public education campaigns, and manages website content for the department. Page 18 identifies Trunk Highway Fund and HUTDF expenditures for Minute Technology Services. And finally, on page 19, it's identified the legislatively directed transfers from the General Fund, HUTD Fund, and Trunk Highway Funds. These transfers have, in fact, been taking place since 1980 in varying amounts. And as you can see in the footnotes on page 19, the intent of the transfers, we believe, was to reimburse expenses not related to specific funds, such as the Trunk Highway Fund. And, Mr. Chair, that is my brief overview of the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on page 17, sir, just to understand all this better, so you have state funding that does public education programs on safety, I presume, But then there's federal money that comes as well into that category. And they pay for some payroll, but not all payroll. I mean, how is that? Are they talking about specific campaigns, and then our DOT wants additional campaigns? What explains, I guess, that we have our own version of the communications, I guess? Thanks.
Mr. Janowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think I'm tracking your line of thought here. There's the state funds that are going into our communications as well as federal funds, and there's also state and probably federal funds going to DOT, and your question is how do we determine what we're doing with that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and yeah, exactly. So are there two different themes that just, I mean, yes. How do we know that we need to augment, you know, how do we decide that we need to augment the federal money coming for communications?
Mr. Janowski.
Mr. Chair, I don't really have a great answer for that. I mean, I don't really understand. There's money that goes to communications, and then that's matched by federal funds that go in there that go to various campaigns. It might be for traffic safety. It could be for Homeland Security, emergency management, for some other kind of piece that comes out of communications. This communication office covers the entire Department of Public Safety.
Sure, and I do understand that. We have two different payroll functions, or two different categories of persons employed to do communications. I still don't know, I guess, why the federal money is not sufficient. Is it not supposed to be sufficient? Every state is supposed to add on another layer? Why do we do our own, I guess, additional?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the federal, positions that are paid out of the federal funds are for specific type of campaigns that the Office of Communications does. The rest, the money that's paid in the other funds is just for all of the communications for the whole department. So it's more that we get specific federal funds for certain campaigns, and that's where the federal funds come from. And we can only use those for those things. We can't use them we don't get a block of money and just use it for anything. It's specifically for campaigns that we're going through.
Okay. All right, thanks. Yes, I understand.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Janowski. Thank you for mentioning the state patrol functions in terms of enforcing distracted driving and safety and seatbelt laws. Do you feel that the department has enough resources to adequately do that? Do you, whether it's from the Trunk Highway Fund or somewhere else, do you feel that you need additional resources for that type of enforcement?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're talking specifically about the Minnesota State Patrol?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the colonel of the State Patrol is here. It might be better just to ask the chief.
Mr. Janowski, thank you. Well, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Thank you, Chair. Matt Langer, Chief of the State Patrol. Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think the best answer to that question is we're always doing the best we can with the resources we have. And for a long period of time, fatalities were dropping significantly. We made a lot of headway, and I think you're well aware of that. We're particularly concerned about 2015. As a matter of fact, we have a hearing later this afternoon on traffic safety. In 2015, we saw a spike with fatalities, and that trend is regrettably continuing in 2016. So it's a difficult question to ask as I sit here today and watching our mission sort of get away from us and traffic fatalities go up. So when it comes to resources, I wish we could do more, although we've been really gracious to what the legislature has done for us, and we have really good people doing everything we can within our current appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you at your authorized strength?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, it's a sort of an urban legend that we have an authorized strength. There is no complement of state troopers. We do the best we can within the appropriation each and every year, and so my philosophy on that is I hire just as many troopers as I can to get them out on the road and to do the best job they can, of course, keeping an eye toward equipment and all the other things that we have to pay for as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Earhart.
Let's put it a different way. Are you at the strength that you have been, or you're less officers on the road, or has that been declining, or there are more people on the road, so it should be increasing, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a difficult question to answer because our historical number of troopers has changed because of the number of troopers we've put into the Capitol Security as a result of funding and initiatives there, and as well as our number of troopers we put in the commercial vehicle section as a result of some court rulings. So I would say that were it not for the last couple legislative sessions that have been generous for us, we'd be in a pretty difficult position. Right now, I feel like we're holding relatively firm, although there are a lot of the stations around the state are staffed at what I would consider, and our district captains would consider to be a rather minimal level to be really highly effective.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members for Mr. Janowski? Thank you for your testimony. Thank you, Colonel Langer. Now we'll hear from Mr. Hatch. Ms. Hatch, I'm sorry. Welcome to committee, Ms. Hatch. If you please state your name for the committee record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tracy Hatch. I'm the Deputy Commissioner, Chief Financial, and Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Transportation. If I may, take you back to page 5 in the report, just to provide at least a little refreshment on the language that was actually passed that required the report. That is located on page 5. And so this report was generated, as you'll see the similarities in terms of the categories, which I'll go over here in a moment as well, between what the Department of Transportation produced and what the Department of Public Safety produced. And it was in consultation and oversight by the Department of Management and Budget. The MnDOT portion of the report begins on page 20. On page 21, you'll see a kind of simplified view of our organizational chart. And the reason why I point that out is because that is essentially the way that the report is laid out. And in fact, the Department of Transportation, as you might guess, has a significant number of trunk highway and highway user tax distribution funds that go to support the department. Those funds are dedicated by the Minnesota Constitution, which I'm sure you're aware, as well as two other types of funding that are dedicated by the Constitution, and that's the County State Aid Highway Fund and the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund. This report, however, is exclusive to the Trunk Highway Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The bulk of the resources that the Minnesota Department of Transportation spends are located in the district offices, and so I will provide a little bit more context about that. But before we get into that, if I could have you turn to page 22. On page 22, we've laid out basically the categories with which we list expenditures in the report. These are categories that can be found in SWIFT, which is the statewide accounting system. And in fact, every expenditure that that is in the report, our section is significant. And so I'm not going to walk through every page in the report or every number in the report. We'd be here for days. But certainly, if you have any questions, we can give you any additional information that you might have regarding those numbers, right down to the number of Post-it notes that were purchased. So so feel free to request that information. We'd be happy to provide it.
Ms. Hatch, we do have a question here. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Hatch, for coming here. You mentioned a couple of things that I think it's appropriate now to maybe make those clarifications. So these reports, and according to the legislation, it was from 2010 to 2015. So are these figures annual figures that you've given us or cumulative figures?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, members, they are annual figures, and they represent the state fiscal year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
of St. Petersburg.
And Ms. Hatch, could you, when you mentioned about the constitutional mandates and requirements, can you help us define from the Constitution dedication what the funds are to be used for?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I absolutely can. And in fact, I did bring a little cheat sheet, if you will, but if it's okay to have that passed out, I'd be happy to do that. The Minnesota Constitution requires that the Trunk Highway Fund be spent for the purpose of, for the purpose of construction, improvement, and maintenance of the Trunk Highway System. It's a kind of a, it's narrow in that it's specific to the Trunk Highway, but it's sort of broad in terms of what is that interpretation. And there has been some case law, including Supreme Court case law here in Minnesota, that has defined things like Trunk Highway purpose and Trunk Highway expenditures. For example, that case law is what has provided eligibility for the Minnesota State Patrol to be permissive for use of the Trunk Highway Fund.
And just a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
If you could, as you go through your testimony, do just kind of reference as to how that interpretation occurs, that would be helpful for us, because there are a lot of them here that looks like it's could be questionable, and we're just trying to gather information as to why. So thank you for that clarification.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Ms. Hatch, please continue.
Mr. Chair and members, so again on page 22, there are the kind of account codes or account classes by which the financial information in the report are split out in. I just want to make one other final note, actually two final notes on page 22. The first is that you'll see in the third paragraph, it says MnDOT is funded through the Trunk Highway Fund, Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, etc. That represents the totality of the funding sources for the department, principally. But I just wanted to point out that bonds are not included in the report, and that is because we did not want to sort of double count the bonds and the debt service. Debt service is included. Bonding is sort of a whole separate animal, and bonding is very much exclusive to capital construction, so the state road construction budget. And in some cases, some salaries are eligible in there, but predominantly it's for capital construction. So the report is laid out, as I mentioned, according to our organizational structure. And on the following page, page 24, is a map of our MnDOT districts. As I'm sure you're aware, there are 8 MnDOT districts statewide. And actually, about 71% of the department's funding as well as staffing exist in the districts. So it's the most significant portion of the department. It's where kind of everything in the department converges, and the actual maintenance occurs as well as the actual road construction projects are delivered from that from the districts. You'll notice at the top of every page, and again, I'll walk you through the high points, and as Representative Petersburg had asked, I will be sure to point out some things that that might raise questions. But in large, we tried to write a kind of an introduction as to what that organizational unit does, what functionally they provide, and then we break down the expenditures. We wanted to give you a sense of what the total funding is like for a particular area, so you'll see Trunk Highway or HUTD, and then you'll see all the other sources listed as other. And again, those other sources are those sources that I mentioned on page 22. One of the areas that might be sort of the order of why is it all Trunk Highway funded would be activities that exist in the Corporate Services Division and activities that exist in the Commissioner's staff offices. And those are noted beginning on page 52 of the report. A couple of things you should know about what we refer to as our corporate services and our corporate accounts. Right now, they are predominantly funded, nearly all, probably 99%, 98% funded from Trunk Highway sources. The reason for that is indicated basically in that very first paragraph. About 95% of the department is Trunk Highway eligible, whether it be from the functional standpoint, construction improvement or maintenance of the Trunk Highway system, or from a staffing perspective, so either capital dollars or salary and associated non-salary. And so up to this point, we have not had a mechanism within the department with which to cost allocate non-trunk highway eligible activities back to those corporate services accounts. So again, the corporate services are things like HR, communications, finance, etc. And so there's about 5% of the MnDOT complement that is that receives support and services from the corporate services area, but are funded from the corporate services trunk highway fund portion. One thing I will note about that is over the last 2 years in particular, we have been working on developing a cost allocation methodology with which we could cost allocate all of the expenses to the correct or appropriate fund. One of the challenges that we've run into, though, with that is many of the areas have insufficient other funds to cover their overhead, if you will. These are basically overhead-type functions that would be really challenging to fund with other sources. So so we're working on that, and we're working on finding the appropriate drivers to go into that cost allocation system. You'll see on the kind of halfway down the page on page 52 a note for corporate accounts. Corporate accounts are things like workers' compensation, unemployment, severance, etc. And for areas that are trunk highway eligible, we fund their unemployment compensation, their workers' compensation expenses, etc., out of a central source rather than having that embedded in each organizational unit's individual budget. It's just a way that we can have a one view of that expenditure and be able to track those expenditures more succinctly than we would. It's less administratively burdensome than having those split out across the department. The other piece I'd like to point out is on page 69. There are other expenditures that you'll not find included in the previous tables. Those are noted on page 69, and I just wanted to point that out so that you're aware that if you're looking for an expenditure such as cash capital projects for facilities, for example, that have been through the bonding process or the capital budget process, those are noted there. And then we also have some additional expenditures that come out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Those are noted on the bottom of page 69, and the legal reference is noted below as well. One of the line items, that first line item under other HUTD expenditures, is statewide indirect costs. And I'll just point out what that is because it may not be obvious. So all state agencies pay for the statewide systems, principally SWIFT and Semaphore. Semaphore is the HR system, and it's done based on the number of transactions, and then those get allocated to all state agencies. And so MnDOT pays roughly $9 to $10 million total per year to support those systems, and this just shows one part of that expenditure that comes from HUTD. We also have some of that that comes from the Trunk Highway Fund and some that comes from the State Airports Fund to support those expenditures. The rest, I think, are somewhat self-explanatory on that page. And Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take any questions or provide any more detail. We have a pretty big section, and I wasn't sure what you would be interested in hearing primarily today. So.
Questions from members? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Hatch. Again, getting back to the original question that I had, I was reviewing while you were testifying, you know, the information that you set out, and I don't see anything in here where it talks about maintenance and others, other areas that were expounded upon by your testimony that indicates that it could be used for anything other than specifically for the trunk highway system. I'm sure there's probably some case law here, and I'm just trying to figure out where we're going from here. So can you tell me if there's another spot in the Constitution or in any other legislation that gives a broader authority for the use of those funds?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is not. In fact, there are some state law that refers to trunk highway purpose. There is, of course, Chapter 174, which lays out the responsibilities of the department. But again, those responsibilities can only be done if they're funded. And so in some cases, we have responsibility for a certain area for which there is, for example, needed to be general funds provided. And if general funds don't exist, we are really stuck in a difficult position with wanting to provide that service and yet wanting to be legal with our funding. It is the thing that I work very hard at to make sure that we are spending trunk highway funds for the purpose in which the legislature appropriated it and within the bounds of the Constitution. We do sometimes run into situations where we realize that well-intentioned folks have made mistakes in the past, and we do work hard to correct those. Typically, I hold a little bit more of a conservative view on the interpretation of construct, improve, or maintain the trunk highway system. The part where we kind of get into a rub is when there's a portion of the system that intersects another system. It might be the trunk highway system in a county system. It might be the trunk highway system in a rail crossing, things like that, where we work really hard to try to divide out, if you will, what really is supporting the trunk highway system and what really is supporting non-trunk highway assets. And to the extent that we can, we split those out. Quite frankly, there are just some program areas in the department that are kind of undercapitalized from a general fund perspective. And this is an issue that we have been working very closely with MMB on as well, trying to come up with alternative strategies to fund particular areas. And it has been a concern of mine for a number of years that we don't have a cost allocation plan in place today. There are many state departments that do have a very detailed and exhaustive cost allocation plan. Typically, those are done to maximize federal funding for most agencies. And I, an example, because I used to work there, is the Department of Human Services. And so for many of their entitlement programs, for example, it makes a lot of sense for them to have a very robust cost allocation system that they can put as many legitimate costs back to the federal government as possible. MnDOT has not had one in the past because it we don't use our federal funds for any purpose other than state road construction and some state planning and research. So our use of federal funds are very limited, and it's not an entitlement program, and so it's just the way we're funded is a little bit unique. So because of that, historically, we've not had a cost allocation system in place. But that is something that over the last 2 years in particular I have been working on, and we're close to having it. There are I could get into detail, but there's two main drivers that exist today within the department that could support that, and I don't believe that either of those drivers alone or even in combination represent an accurate picture. So we're working to develop a couple of new drivers that would aid us in being a little bit more careful about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to first of all commend you on, I mean, this is a difficult task, and I've been in situations too where as an administrator you don't have any clear direction, and so you make your best guess as to which way it should go, and without that direction we sometimes have, as legislature, has maybe let you down. On the other hand, it sometimes gives you more leeway. My guess is that there are many issues that you would like to have some more clarity. Do you have a handle on what areas that you think would be better dealt with if we had better descriptions? I mean, I'm looking at the list of items, and we have civil rights as being paid for through the trunk highway system, and a few others that maybe there wasn't any other place to fund it. But at the same time, when we're looking at how do we fund the infrastructure of the state, we do need to be a little bit more prioritized in regards to that. So do you have any ideas for us as legislators on how we could help?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I may make one clarification and then answer your question, I'd be happy to. The clarification would be that the Office of Civil Rights, as noted in the report, is actually there to ensure DBE participation in those kinds of activities on construction projects. So those are all of the activities performed in that office are trunk highway eligible, and they actually very directly support. They're more like program project development, program delivery kinds of activities. The internal program that you might think of more as sort of employment for the department, maintaining all of those civil liberties for the department and for employees. Those exist within our Office of Human Resources. Just a point of clarification. In all honesty, we know that the legislature and we know that the governor have a lot of hard decisions to make when it comes to funding agencies and where to put discretionary funds. For us, those discretionary funds would come in the form of general funds to our modal offices. We see the modal connections as integral to the entire system functioning at a high level. So that would include transit, that could include passenger rail, that would include aeronautics to some degree, although they have the state airports fund. So aeronautics is in a slightly different position. But those are some areas in particular that are significantly, in our opinion, in my opinion, underfunded from a state general fund perspective. And so we maintain those funds going to those program areas from the general fund. You know, for example, it's capped in state law that the Office of Transit is entitled to $416,000 for operations and administration from the general fund. That is really hard to administer a significant program with $416,000. So there's not much wiggle room in there for me to bill them for cost allocation, for example. And there are some other challenges such as that, but I would say that is our biggest, just not having any flexible funding in the department whatsoever. I will also say that for areas such as the commissioner, when he's working on a project that is for one of those modal areas, if it's a significant project or he's having multiple meetings on a particular topic, we do set up separate charge accounts so that those folks, senior leadership that are working on, for example, a passenger rail issue, would be charging to the passenger rail program. So while we don't have a dedicated cost allocation plan for those times when the commissioner's going to spend an hour, he and some of the senior staff working on an issue, those folks are charging directly to the program area that is not trunk highway eligible.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I was going to let go, but you brought up something now that just begs another question. So at $416,000, is that which is $419,000 for transit, and you said there are programs there that doesn't allow any wiggle room there. Are you implying that then the funding does come from somewhere else that you do have discretion over? And how do you handle the projects then that aren't covered underneath there? Are they just discontinued or stopped?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll give you kind of a perfect example, and I'm this could open up even more questions, which is fine. But for example, our rail area. So we have very little general fund. We have $256,000 that goes to support our, which is our base appropriation from the general fund, to support our freight rail area. So I can't use trunk highway to support that area. So what tends to happen is when there is an eligible source, such as maybe it's a county system, or in some cases it's a trunk highway system where we're working on cooperative agreements with a local unit of government. Again, as I mentioned earlier, sometimes we have to kind of split hairs and we look at the work that's taking place on that intersection or on that project and we split it out. So some of it might be trunk highway funded and some of it might be funded from those general fund dollars. Some of it might come from a program area if there's permissibility in the law, and that's just how we would have to handle it. Or we would have to, as you say, discontinue that service. And in some cases, that's a very, very real possibility, especially as we get into situations where the growth in healthcare coverage and the growth in salaries is kind of squeezing a budget that was, you know, several years ago, very adequate. This year, I believe our overall, I'm trying to go back and think. I think our overall inflationary cost on compensation this year was 6%, and I believe for fiscal 17 it's 10%. So when you have that kind of year over year, and I know our staff work very hard and they deserve their paychecks, but when you have that kind of compounding inflationary impact on a significant line item like salary, it adds up pretty quickly.
Mr. Chair, I'll leave questions for now, for later for others. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions for members? Mr. Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hatch, I think the average person on the street, when they're filling up their gas tank and you ask them where's their money going with the tax on gas and so on and so forth with the trunk highway fund, they say it's all going to roads and bridges. But I'm hearing from your testimony that it's not. MnDOT has 500 FTEs just in corporate overhead. And a lot of this is being funded. Now, I see specifically like $5.7 million is coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund for HR function. How do we justify that in view of the fact that the Constitution says to establish and maintain highways? I can understand where you're charging off something to the highway fund for engineering and other things like that, but for general corporate overhead, how does that happen? And how long has it happened? Is this one of these things where the Trunk Highway Fund is just the bank and you can go to the bank? Because it really does seem like over the years, there's literally millions and millions of dollars that have been taken out of this fund. And from the specific reading of the Constitution, it just doesn't seem like it's right.
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, just a point of clarification. The 516 employees that are listed here are not the number of employees in our corporate services area. Those are the number of employees in the department that are not eligible for trunk highway funding. So
there's more.
No, 516 is the total of the employees. If you look at the entire complement, we have 4,815 FTEs, which is different than headcount. We have a headcount right now of about 4,741 employees. So of the total FTEs, so again, that is the total complement, total number of hours worked in a year divided by 2,080, which is the number of hours a single employee works in a year. When we have, for example, overtime that occurs through the winter, that FTE number can go up a little bit, which is why there's the difference between FTE and headcount. But of the total FTEs that we have in the department, about 516 of those FTEs are not trunk highway eligible and are not funded from the trunk highway fund. So there should be no conflict there. They are simply not funded from the trunk highway fund. They are funded from our state aid area, from our transit area, from our passenger rail area, ports and waterways, that kind of thing. So those are not funded with trunk highway or HUTD resources. But the general corporate accounts, you're correct. Those, the corporate accounts, so finance, HR, some of our IT activities, those are split out by program area. So the non-trunk highway portions do not get trunk highway support for IT. Communications office, for example, those kind of functions are corporate functions, and they are provided to the entire agency. I would say that those functions do go to support road and bridges. We absolutely, I would say every employee in the department that is funded from trunk highway eligible sources do support the trunk highway system and the trunk highway fund. And a perfect example of that is if we don't have staff in the finance and accounting area to do bill backs and to bill FHWA for the project costs, we're not going to be bringing in those federal funds. Those federal funds go directly to support the program areas, go directly to support road and bridge activities. The Office of Human Resources, their work for 95% of the employees directly supports bringing employees in, getting employees trained up and ready to do trunk highway eligible activities. And as an example, as I mentioned, our districts, so those eight districts located statewide, 71% of our department is located in those districts. And I would have absolutely no problem saying that all of their activities are road and bridge eligible. They do road and bridge support functions. They are the ones that are providing the direct maintenance. Those are the plow drivers, the maintenance forces. Those are the folks that are out there doing construction inspection and construction oversight, those kinds of activities. And yes, sometimes it takes a little bit of overhead in the form of communications. The big chunk of, for example, our communications area is providing information to the traveling public about construction projects, about delays, about road maintenance that they can expect. If the legislature has a difference of opinion, that's fine. We have interpreted that largely to be a direct overhead expense of providing road and bridge services.
Ms. Hatch, I would assume that you'd think of this along the same lines. Then there's 45 FTEs in environmental stewardship, and which is described as compliance with federal or state laws and permits. I assume that you would suggest that that's with building roads, bridges. What I'm wondering is, are there that many state laws or federal laws that are so onerous that we should be looking at those things so that we could remove some of the red tape?
Mr. Chair, I would not be able to adequately speak to the regulations, but I do know that that entire area, the Office of Environmental Stewardship, that is exclusively what they do. And again, they work directly on road and bridge projects, making sure that they can pass environmental clearance and EIS. They're approving plans. They're working with PCA. They're working with the federal government on those regulations. And we'd be happy to get you more information. I don't have anyone with me today that can directly speak to the volume or the types of EPA regulations, but I'd be happy to bring that back and get more information to you. What I can tell you is that entire area goes directly to support road and bridge activities on the trunk highway system.
Thank you. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hatch, I'm kind of going over the MnDOT districts, and I know there's eight, and I can see that they're different sizes.
Yeah.
Can you give me a little bit background about, do you try to distribute the funds equitably among the districts, and how do you do that? Because I can also see that the lane different, or the actual mileage differs as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are basically three different sources of funding that go to the districts. The first is the state road construction budget. That budget is actually broken up into, kind of for simplicity, we'll call it two buckets. The first bucket is the statewide performance program, and that is where we look at statewide criteria. For example, we want all of the roads to maintain, all of the districts to have a similar degree of good roads versus poor roads. And so we would split that up from a central perspective, and so each district would get a different allocation in that case. And then we have what we call the district risk management program within the state road construction budget. And the district risk management program is where we allocate funds to the districts largely based on a few different factors, one of them being population, one of them being the number of miles that they have in total, and one of them being the number of miles that are on the interstate system or the NHS system. And so that helps us to split out the federal funds in particular. And so those two buckets of money go to fund the state road construction portion that the districts get. In addition to that, they get two different types of funding for operations, for operating, and that the operations goes to support salaries. Those two different sort of buckets of money are what we call maintenance and operations funding, which is funded in the appropriations bill separately from the program delivery funding. So maintenance and operations funding, that goes to support things such as our maintenance forces, plow drivers, plow maintenance, plow fabrication, all the other types of equipment that we use on the maintenance side of the organization. And then the other is program delivery, which is direct support for doing everything from design, environmental clearance work, everything that it takes to get a project ready to let, and then in fact to provide the construction oversight on those projects. So those come from the construction program delivery side of the budget. So there's kind of three different big chunks, if you will, that go into the districts.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to return to my earlier question about human resources. Now, the $5.7 million is being taken out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and the almost 79 FTEs that take care of HR labor relations. What is that a percent of the entire HR budget for your organization?
Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, effectively the entire HR office is supported from trunk highway funds.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your question?
Oh, yeah, I'm afraid it does. Thank you.
Sorry. And Mr. Chair, Representative, that isn't the way I would prefer to do it either. I would prefer to have the ability to charge back to areas that are not trunk highways, such as the Office of Passenger Rail, the Office of transit, for example, the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations that does rail funding. But again, I think historically, so the history long before I became Chief Financial Officer, I take full responsibility for it now. I've been CFO for the last 5 years, and we've been working on trying to correct this. But for the basically the existence of our department, because the non-trunk highway eligible activities were such a small, minute part of the department, it's my understanding that leadership, you know, in decades past had decided it was de minimis, not worth the administrative burden to separate it out. I tend a little bit more to want to follow the more conservative end of that approach, and so I just want to keep it clean, and I just have resources that are not trunk highway funds with which to split out those resources. So that's why I pointed them out. I just don't have the general fund dollars to build back at this time to those other areas. But we are working on developing that through the cost allocation plan. The other thing I would say is that, I just lost my train of thought. To build back through the cost allocation plan, it'll come back to me. I'm sorry.
Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate that, and I know you're trying very hard. I just look at that, and I feel that there is some room for reform there, especially since the entire HR function is being subsidized by the Trunk Highway Fund. So I hope that in the future, you know, we have these hearings, and so often it's informational and everything else, but we need to get some things done, and some of this really needs some addressing, and we're not going to do it one hearing, obviously, but it's something that I think the commissioner and staff realistically should look at, and just so we can get more money driven to the bottom line for roads and bridges. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's another way to look at this, though. And, you know, very often I think the common feeling is we subsidize transit, we don't subsidize roads, building of roads. But if we didn't acknowledge that it took people to build a system of roads, and so we put all of the trunk highway money into literally the contract to build it, and then in another part of the budget had general fund money from all taxpayers to pay people to make that happen, then that would be a subsidy to building roads. So, I mean, that's just a different way of thinking about how we charge for the people who actually make it happen.
Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you're exactly right that it takes, I mean, there's a lot more people than just actual people in plows or people out on construction jobs that it takes to, you've got to have people to hire those folks. You've got to have people to pay the bills. You've got to have people to keep the lights on. So I would agree with you that it takes a lot of other resources to do that. One example that if I may address back to Representative Glum is that the governor has requested in his supplemental budget funding for our freight rail area, because that was an area that we discovered last year, and you may recall it from testimony last year, that was more heavily funded with trunk highway dollars than should have been. That was an area that I was unaware of. I was unaware that trunk highway dollars were being spent more heavily in that area than I feel is appropriate. And so we did ask the governor, and he did recommend in the supplemental budget to correct that for us. So as we see those areas, we do bring those up and try to get those funded. I believe the governor's recommendation is for $1.3 million, to cover that, and that would go a long way toward right sizing that portion of the budget.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Hatch. Can you tell us how the agency comes up with projections for human resources costs for the 4,741 employees or 4,800 and some FTEs that you talked about earlier? How that process happens, and just kind of characterize it briefly, if you could.
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Human Resources Office, just like the rest of the corporate services areas, we basically don't project any growth. We basically project that as what we call kind of flatline. And so we ask all of those offices generally to live within their means. And so as those offices have very little non-salary expenditures, the 95%+ of their budget is salary. And so they, in many cases, hold vacancies and things like that to make sure that they can make their budget. There might be some cases where a unique program comes up and we'll fund that separately. An example would be our drug testing program or our hearing and physicals that we have to provide for maintenance employees. And so we'll fund that maybe separately if they have so many hires that they run out of their allocated dollars for that, but in general, those areas are stagnant, and we project a flat budget for them.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, so, Ms. Hatch, what I'm asking, I guess, is for the 4,800 FTEs across the organization, how do you project or decide on, as you budget, how much even in times of recession, there has not been a decrease in the amount that we pay people in state government ever found yet today, incidentally. But how do you come up with what that increase cost to the agency through all the various funds that the monies come from for salaries and benefits for all of the 4,700 and some employees? How do you come up with what that number is when you present that budget then to the legislature?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I could ask just to make sure I'm understanding your question, what you're asking, how we determine what the inflation factor is, that 6% and 10% that I mentioned earlier? Is that the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Hatch, last year we went through a budgeting process. There was a transportation budget, and there's a human resources component of that, mm-hmm. salary and benefits that you use in your projections that you present to the legislature. How do you as an agency arrive at what those amounts will be as you go through that process?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the inflation factors we receive from MMB, and they base that on a variety of things, I assume, labor negotiations, current market, what they understand. They're the administrator for health care for state employees, and so they provide to us what the inflation factor is. In terms of growth in the actual positions, we typically, again, hold the corporate services areas more flat than we hold the others. We typically try to funnel more funding to, in particular, the maintenance and operations area and the program delivery area. And so we would look to those particular areas within the department to provide information to us about what they need and what they would do with additional resources. And usually it comes down to two things. It's usually staffing. For example, I know that we've had a number of employees recently that have left our metro district, construction inspectors in particular, to go work for other counties and cities in the area. And so they would say to us, based on the projects we've got coming in the queue, we need to hire 6 more inspectors, as an example. And then we would sort of build that into the budget request. And again, the inflation factor comes from MMB, and we apply the inflation factor consistently like all state agencies do.
Thank you, Ms. Hatch and Mr. Chair.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Hatch. So just a quick addition of the line of equipment capital across the 8 metro districts, or the 8 districts, I should say. It's about $1 billion. And I'm just curious, could you just clarify, does the department construct any roads, or is all of the equipment they buy, all of the materials, is that all related to maintenance? Is there a hard line between those two?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that I would have a delineation, but I would guess that at least 70% is maintenance-related equipment, and that could be everything from snow clearance, that could be you know, loaders and skid loaders, things like that. We have significant equipment in the department, and you know, the kind of our flagship is the snowplow. And of course, in the summer, we take the plows off the front, and we still use them for construction and for other maintenance activities. We also use them for. For example, if there's a significant freeway incident, we'll put a crash attenuator on the back, and we'll have that blocking traffic or providing a safe zone for those working on a crash or something up ahead. But I would say the majority of the equipment budget is in the maintenance area. We do have significant equipment, though, in construction as well. But we don't typically do construction ourselves. The large projects we typically consult out or contract out with local contractors. But we do do some things like patching. We do paving. We do kind of smaller construction jobs or large maintenance jobs, depending on how you look at it. So we do some of that, and so we do have, you know, pavers and stripers and things like that that. That go to support those activities, but equipment is a significant challenge from us. And in fact, you probably recall, nearly every year we're asking for additional funding for equipment. There was a point in time, with actually about 2.5-3 years ago, where our plow fleet was approaching a 20-year life cycle. It should be more like a 12-year life cycle to be, you know, optimally efficient. We should be running on about a 12-year life cycle. So we asked for some funding from the legislature. We received it, and we drove that. We're driving that number down to about 14 years. But that means we have to fabricate and move 57 plows a year. So we're doing that. You know, it was distressing to me when I found out, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that we actually had mechanics going to salvage yards looking for parts because our plows were so old. And I thought, that's not an efficient way to run our fleet. And so we worked as an agency to drive that down. But that's an example of how we try to manage fleet. But it's an ongoing challenge for us to keep the right equipment on the road.
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Hatch, just follow up. You know, is it possible it would be more cost-effective on some of these small column maintenance, repair, whatever, that would go to the road construction companies? I mean, so it wouldn't, you know, it seems to me it would make some sense to have clearly what's done in-house versus what's bid out and done outside. But it doesn't sound like that's how it works.
What's that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, it generally is how it works. So for the large construction projects, the projects you'll see in the STIP, those actually are contracted out. In some cases, the contractors build in equipment leasing and so forth expenditures into their construction project. But the equipment that we own are typically only for smaller, patching kind of jobs. We don't do any real significant construction in-house. We contract that out. We just don't have the resources or the right equipment to do that. It would be cost prohibitive at this point. So we use the state road construction budget, as you know, to fund that with contractors.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a growing concern that at least the urban myth that the high-income, high-tax people are leaving the state because of the high costs here. And for many years, there's been reports out of MnDOT that they're losing the best and the brightest to private industry, that they are going for consulting. Is that trend still going on?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I regret to tell you it is going on in two ways. Yes, we're losing a lot of people. In fact, we were just talking about that earlier today. We're losing a lot of people to private industry. And that is not just in construction. We're losing planners. We're losing finance professionals. We have a hard time finding even just entry-level accounting positions. But that's also true for other cities and counties. Typically, you know, when you look at total compensation, the state is competitive with our city and state, city and county counterparts. But often the counties and cities pay a little higher in salary. And so we find that we lose a lot of really good talent. In fact, just this morning I learned of a critical planner that is just a superstar, and she has just taken a position with a county, I believe, a city here in the Twin Cities. So we lose kind of in both ends.
Hi, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hurt.
Is there any solution to that? Do we have to raise the limits on what can be paid and all that sort of thing? I know that the top layers were really squeezed there together, and and they can't go any further than they look for more money elsewhere.
Is that?
Do you want a review of some sort to raise that, to keep those people? If they're
Mr. Chair, Representative, we I know that MNB has been working on that for actually a couple of years, a few years. There was, you might recall, I can't remember exactly what the name of the committee was, but there was a committee that looked at compensation, and in particular that compression factor that occurs at the kind of top levels of the agencies. And again, they looked at total compensation and found that the state was fairly competitive. I guess I would say that for those of us who are in state agencies, and again, not being critical of that work, but for those of us who are in state agencies and losing key staff to cities, counties, and private sector, I would find that that is still a challenge for us. So, but I think that there's a number of tools in that toolbox that we should explore. And I know that there's a partnership of all of the HR directors from all of the state agencies that work with MNB. And they are working on some strategies to kind of do, I guess, what we would think of as kind of out-of-the-box thinking. What we do know is that the strategies that have served the state well up to this point are not going to serve the state well moving forward. We have to think of different ways to attract talent, retain talent, diverse talent, and we have to make sure that we are being, yes, salary competitive, but there are other things that we can do as well, whether it would be recognition programs or just providing a way for to incentivize employees to stay. And those are really, really important strategies. Yes, pay is important, but I think a lot of the staff who've been in state government for any length of time, there are just other benefits to being in public service, and I think we're open to looking at all those options. And I believe the HR group is doing that.
Mr. Chairman, I have one more question.
Senator Earhart.
I noticed on page 5 that you list the cost of preparing this report is estimated at $31,000. Is that after net after 15% efficiency?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is the actual direct cost, and if I could opine on that, I think that is actually a little bit low. Those are the direct costs of the folks that were hands-on and spent significant time putting the report together. But again, for all the folks that submitted information, that reviewed the report, make sure it was accurate, make sure their descriptions of their offices were accurate, none of those costs are factored in there. But it does not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I see that you left the last 10 pages blank in here, and I thought maybe that's how you got your 15%.
All right, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. And you commented earlier that you didn't know kind of what to focus on. There's so much here. So I just have a couple questions, and I actually have a lot more. But looking at the Transportation Ombudsman on page 61, it says the office was established several years before it was passed into law in 2013. And then looking at the funding, 2010, 2011, there's nothing there. So I'm wondering how it was funded before it was passed into law. And then also kind of, I'll have a follow-up after.
Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it was in existence. Commissioner Sorrell at the time, I don't know that I would even be able to think of when that was, 2009 maybe? 2009, the office was created, and I think at that time it was actually funded just as part of the commissioner's office. So those expenditures were in existence, but they would show up here in the report under the commissioner's office. And then they were funded kind of separately as their own office beginning in 2012. And then legislation was passed in 2013 that specifically said that the department needed to have a transportation ombudsman. One thing I might mention about the ombudsman in particular is that ombudsman typically works on concerns that come up from citizens regarding transportation projects. So possibly some maintenance projects as well, but typically they are where you have maybe a transportation construction project running up against a private landowner and there are concerns or issues. So we found the ombudsman actually to be very helpful in sort of mediating and de-escalating those kinds of disputes in the department.
Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that clarification. That's helpful information. Looking also then at some of the other, and we've other members have addressed the overlap we see in some of these offices, so I'm looking at the Ombudsman and then Customer Relations and maybe even Communications, which is all of that is reaching out to the public. And so there are 11 FTEs in Communications, 5 in Customer Relations, 5 with the Ombudsman, and it seems to be a lot of overlap with their duties, so kind of actually even to Representative Earhart's point about whether or not we're attracting all the right talent, I wonder if there's a lot of overlap if we can consolidate some of these positions, and then, you know, whether or not we can attract more talent because we recognize people can maybe handle more than they're being given at the moment, if that makes sense.
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, it's interesting you bring that up. I'm hoping we're not going to have to do this report in 2016, just because it's just one more thing to do. But if we did it, you would find Customer Relations and the Ombudsman Office combined. We just recently combined those two offices for that very purpose. We had some staff turnover. We had some staff that left the department, and we saw that as an opportunity to shift gear a little bit and to combine those two offices. There has been, even within the department at times, some confusion about what Customer Relations does versus Communications, but they actually are two very separate activities. Communications deals more with internal and external communications, including press releases and information about the construction projects that happen during the year, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas Customer Relations has been really more focused on marketing and market engagement. So we do a fair amount of outreach. We do an annual survey, omnibus survey, to seek feedback from the general public about our services and about what they're interested in and how well we're meeting their needs. We also had a component within the Customer Relations Office that dealt with questions or feedback from constituents. So we have a system called CoreFlow that when we get an inquiry from a citizen, it goes through this CoreFlow process where we log it, and then it might be something like, I'm trying to think of an example. I remember getting one time from a constituent who had a concern about the way that we had put up signage around a construction detour. And so that would come into the Customer Relations Office, and then they would get information from the appropriate project manager or signage expert, and then provide information back to that constituent. So it's a little bit more the direct one-on-one contact, which is why we combined it with the Ombudsman Office, and versus Communications, which serves that kind of more standard communications function that probably every entity has.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I'm happy to hear that, and hopefully we can see more of that sort of consolidation happening. And this is kind of my final question, and more or less just curiosity, and I apologize if it was already addressed, but I'm looking at page 69 on the other HUD expenditures, and there's one that was a workplace telework program grant to the University of Minnesota Humphrey School. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious what that is and how that specifically, you know, looking at our Constitution for the little handout you have, which was great. Thank you for that. How that kind of correlates to the constitutional mandate there.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know a great deal about that program. I'll share with you what I do know, and if that's not sufficient, we'd be happy to do follow-up and get you more detail. But we have been involved with a number of telework or kind of trying to change commuting patterns for folks, and some of that includes work from home activities. And so the goal of these types of programs, and this one in particular, is about decreasing congestion on the roadway by having folks or creating programs or incentives. We don't fund them, but programs or incentives, and we work with the U, for example, to figure out how to create programs and incentives to get companies to have their employees either work from home or do non-traditional peak hour commuting so that it decreases the congestion on the roadway, which is a benefit to the trunk highway users.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Tracy Hatch for being here today. I know she loves to talk about this, so don't feel bad that she's still talking about it, because I'm sure she actually enjoys it. So just what I know about meeting with you. So I have a question regarding the two questions, one regarding the ombudsperson position, and that one is, I know in the past you have had an employee ombudsperson. Why was that eliminated? Can it come back? And I think that's really important as we're talking about the culture of MnDOT, that there's someone that's outside of the realm of management, hopefully, and that can actually aid in some of this cultural thing, the culture that we hear about MnDOT quite often.
Ms. Hatch?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we had the current ombudsperson, which works for the commissioner, and as I mentioned earlier, kind of deals with those larger issues that are typically either public-facing and or kind of issues that the commissioner is asked to weigh in on. We also at one point for, I know it was for sure a year, it might have even been 2 years, I have to go back and look, we had an internal ombudsperson that was on contract. We had some folks reach out to that person. I think at the end of the day, the ombudsperson who was in the ombud role at the time had found that that was just either not utilized as well as we thought it would be, or for whatever reason, and I can, again, we can do follow-up on this, but that contract was not extended once it expired. And my understanding was that it just wasn't found to be a good cost benefit, but again, we'd be happy to take that back and take a look at it. Mm-hmm. I think resources again would be a concern with that. But as you mentioned, culture change. I would just take the opportunity to plug that Commissioner Zelli and I believe the current senior leadership team. That culture change is a significant portion of the work that we're trying to accomplish within the department, and Commissioner Zelli is a great addition to the MnDOT team in leading that charge.
Okay, and then my follow-up question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then my follow-up question is regarding, I'm glad that you recognize about the culture and that there's trying to be change about it, because we get better service to Minnesotans when we have a culture that really supports the people on the bottom line that are providing the services. And they're doing a great job, so I want to give a shout-out to them. My question for you is, in 2009, after the 35W bridge went down, there was a study about innovation in MnDOT. And I want to know since we're talking about culture and organizational effectiveness, I want to know what MnDOT has done with that report. And I was just talking to Representative Nash here, and something just glares out at me in that report is about it actually says about the Peter Principle, that MnDOT promotes people to their level of incompetence. And I'm very concerned about that, and I know that's a harsh question to ask, but frankly, we need to make sure that we have the top-notch people in management, they're not being shuffled around, and that they're really able to carry out the mission that's in state statute and support employees in making that happen. So can you tell me what's happened with that report?
Is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you speaking of the transportation operations and management, the task force report, is that the report that you're speaking of? Or was there a report specifically on innovation? I'm not familiar with it, if okay. there was one, but well, I'd be happy to do follow-up.
Well, Mr. Chair, if there's another report you want to refer to that you know about, we can talk about that, but I will, maybe we can follow up to see what's happened with that, because it was conducted because of a major catastrophe in Minnesota, and some important things came out of that, and mm-hmm. I'm just concerned that some of the same culture is still existing, the same practices are still existing, and who is doing the oversight and accountability for that. It was a very helpful report.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry if I'm not following the exact report that you were that you're referring to, but I'd be happy to do follow-up specifically mm-hmm. on that, and I'd be happy to connect with you offline as well about that. What I can tell you about the MnDOT culture is the MnDOT culture is a very strong, very robust culture, and it's built from people who the terminology that you hear within the department is bleed orange. And so without gushing about the department, I will tell you that the organization many folks in the department have worked for the department their entire career, and they deeply love being a public servant. They deeply, deeply love serving in their current roles. If you go out to a maintenance truck station, you will find people who absolutely are just diehards for serving the public. They love what they do, and they do not forget. They do not forget the public that they serve. They do not forget that what they do saves lives every day. We were just talking this morning about high tension cable barrier and how that saves lives. It saved my life, in fact, one day. And the first thing I did after I hit the cable is I hit my OnStar button and I picked up my phone and I emailed the maintenance engineer in Metro and thanked them for installing it. They know that they save lives every day, and they're deeply passionate about it. We have a strong culture of folks who love what they do and don't want to work anywhere else. We have some folks who are leaving the department, as we mentioned earlier, but we have a big contingent of folks that have worked for the department for many years. And I think that is both a strength and can be a liability. Sometimes innovation comes, sometimes innovation is harder to sell when folks are looking at what they've always done and they think that it's working. I will tell you that we have done a lot of things in the last 3 years in particular, since Commissioner Zelli has been there and since we put the current management team in place, that has spurred innovation, that has created partnerships, that has looked for a new and different way to do things. And I say all across the department, every time I speak on the topic, if you're doing the same thing that you've done for the last 10 years, you need to look at a new way of doing it, because we have to be more efficient, we have to be more innovative, we have to use all of those tools to get there. So I know innovation is something that's sometimes hard to get going, but we have really, I think, made a lot of strides in the last 3 years, and I'd be happy to meet with you and provide more context about that, as well as that report.
Thank you, Ms. Hatch. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Hatch, the passenger rail office, some of the funds, I'm reading the narrative here, suggest a bulk of them come from the federal government, from grants or something. Can you characterize for us where and how those funds get here from the federal government, and then contrast, if you will, if you have the actual amounts for 2015 of federal versus general fund money, that would be helpful.
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the I'm trying to find the page number, sorry, 49. The Passenger Rail Office is funded. It gets a $500,000 appropriation from the legislature each year, and that covers its operations, essentially. And then the rest of the funding is for projects, and the legislature had appropriated in 2009 $26 million for capital, and that was GO bonds. And so those dollars have basically come to an end. But we also received some federal funds to go along with that. And so these typically come in the form of grants that we apply for, discretionary program grants with the federal government, FRA in particular. And so we want our passenger rail program to be poised so that we can always take advantage of federal funds as they become available. Some of that is used, a little bit of that has been used for planning to put the state passenger and freight rail plan together, but the bulk of those dollars have gone toward environmental EIS work on a couple of projects, the Twin Cities to Chicago second daily train, as well as the Twin Cities to Milwaukee work, and there's been some work that's taken place on NLX, which is the passenger rail project to Duluth. And we are, the governor is also asking for $1 million to continue to keep the capital side of that continuing for the next couple of years.
So Mr. Ruskowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Hatch, so those grants, are they open-ended grants or are they project-specific? You say we want to do do this NLX to Duluth. We want to do the rail program to nowhere or whatever you want to do. And so it's project-specific. What with grants from the federal government, as we provide grants here using taxpayer money, similarly to local communities in Minnesota in a variety of areas, a lot of them have strings attached to them and mandates attached to them. Can you characterize for us what type of mandates that those bring from the federal government that we are also signing up to at the same time, and what level of review are those for those mandates, and what level of scrutiny is placed upon them when applying for those, and how much communication happens back to the people in terms of what the department is signing up for?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll try to address your questions. There was a number of them embedded in there, so I'll do my best. If I miss one, please let me know. Typically, those are specific discretionary grants that the department would apply for on behalf of the state. And if we're selected by the federal government to receive a grant, they are project-specific. They are based on the specific scope for which we applied and submitted the application. So those funds could not be used for another purpose, and they are time-limited. So the grant that we get will say the number of years that the grant is good for. We do have to seek legislative approval in order to accept and spend all federal funds, even these discretionary funds. So those happen in a couple of different ways. If it's on the biennial budget cycle, we submit what's called a federal fund summary with our biennial budget, and they would be listed there in that biennial budget. We also, if they're outside of that biennial budget cycle, we would submit an LAC request. And then that request has, you know, maybe a little bit more detail provided. We are always happy to provide more detail, though, on any of those requests. And I think right now we have two grants that are ARRA related, and I'm not aware of us applying for any additional new passenger rail funds other than the funds that we currently have from the feds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? And Ms. Hatch, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for being here today. We do have a couple other quick questions for DPS. If Mr. Donaski, is he still here?
Mr. Chair, we're going to try to find Commissioner Donaski. But my name is Larry Freund with the Department of Public Safety, the Chief Financial Officer. If I can.
No problem, Mr. Donaski. We just had a couple of quick questions for the department here. I know one of them was regarding around the technology services. We've had a pretty big increase in the funds from the user, from the Trunk Highway Fund in payroll, yet they went down in the other funds that are not funding that. And what I'm curious about, or maybe I don't even want to know, but I have to ask, is that have anything to do with our MNLARS program and the technology services that is going on and the issue that we've had with MNLARS?
Mr. Chair, again, for the committee, Mark Donaski, Department of Public Safety. Are you referring to page 18, sir, the technology services piece?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Chair, no, that doesn't have anything to do with MNLARS.
And could you explain how, from a payroll percentage standpoint, we have approximately a 40% increase in payroll on the funds that are used directed through the Trunk Highway User Fund, and then basically flat on the other side?
Mr. Chair, and I will defer to the CFO, but it's my understanding that this is how the legislature appropriates this money. It's directly appropriated for technology services to the Department of Public Safety as is. And as Mr. Freund and I were talking earlier, you can see that this goes back to 2010. It probably goes back a number of years before that this is how the legislature appropriated that technology money to the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Any other comments on that?
Mr. Chair, yeah, there. I'm not, I don't really know the 40% increase in payroll. I'm not sure, you know, the part there is this has been a long-standing appropriation here, and again, we manage the money and the services as we can with the appropriations we get each year, but the office appropriation has been this way for several years now.
Well, just from reading the tables, we see from payroll goes from 1.6 to 2.3 million from 2010 to 2015, and yet on the payroll down below on the other, it goes from 673 to 510. So that was just curious how is our FTEs being put in one group versus the other.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not. I can't give you specifics on that right now. I can get those for you. But it's basically with the office. We have a technology office, a small office there, and they manage They try to use the resources they get in their appropriations. They get general fund, they get trunk highway fund. They try to use those to best manage the staffing and every other cost they have in the division. So sometimes there's just been some changes over the years that they've decided to put more salaries one way versus the other here. And this is just a smaller part of the technology for our agency.
Okay. I guess I would like like you to research that for me.
Mr. Chair,
can understand that a little.
And if I might, this is, you know, as you're well aware, over the past couple of years, the Office of Technology in the state has changed over to Minute Services. So this primarily is Minute Services fees to the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, you covered the question I had about the technical services.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And I think just at the very tail end, I think you got to the answer. How is your department being involved with Minute and that information there? Because we're hearing it in state government finance as well, that there are some changes in how that distribution of responsibility and funding is. And the Department of, I think, Transportation and others are slightly handled a little bit differently. So if you could clarify that, that'd be wonderful.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as you see in this, we get an allocation from various funds for our Minute Services, and this has been a transition since the consolidation of Minute a few years ago that came down. Minute Services has advised us, and again, I'll refer to the CFO, but in the next couple of years, they're going to go to a fee-based process, and so rather than just an allocation coming out and then us basically transferring over X number of dollars to Minute Services, it'd be a fee for a service. So from a transparency standpoint, it'd be a lot easier to see what you're spending those funds on and where they're coming from.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Natsky, are you anticipating an increase, maintaining the same? Have they given you a kind of indication of what those fee structures might be and how it relates to your budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative, not specifically the amount of the fees. I know that it's been pushed back a little bit so that it aligns with moving forward in our budgets for the biennium. The way they were going to roll it out, we were going to be a year behind. So they're holding off now. They're going to come out with their new fee structure in time for the next budget cycle so that agencies like the Department of Public Safety will be able to look at that, at their new fee structure, and then be able to build it into the budget. But as far as whether it's going to increase and decrease, I wouldn't have any idea.
Mr. Janowski, would the fees that they would be charging be included in the funds that are taken from the Trunk Highway Fund in regards to Minlar specifically? Would those additional fees that were in the governor's budget be specifically taken out of those funds?
Mr. Chair, Minlar's is not in here. Minlar's is an entirely different.
Right, I understand that, but you said, Minlar's will be worked on by Minute, correct?
Correct, yes.
So are those fees that Minute will be providing or be charging you be coming out of our Trunk Highway User Fund to pay for those fees that Minute will have to charge the department?
Mr. Chair, if I'm understanding correctly, yes. So we will still receive appropriations for technology services rather than a lump sum. The Minute services will have to come to the agency and talk about each job or however the project is going to work out, and so it'll be billed out that way.
Thank you. Any other questions for the department? Okay, thank you for being here and thank you for coming back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, we as for informational purposes here, the Capital Investment has asked us make sure we note that we heard a number of bills last year, April 22nd, 23rd. If you remember, we rolled through a significant number of bills, approximately 60 of them, 60-some. There is a list of them in your packet. What I want to note is that I'm just laying those over. We're not moving those bills from this committee, but just so Capital Appreciation knows where they're at and where the status of them is at, we have laid those bills over. So just want to make a note of that.
Representative Kelly?
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. I'm I was looking over that list, and I understand these are bills we heard last year. Excuse me. And Representative Pearson has a bill on our local airports that I don't think was heard last year, and I'm wondering what happens to bills that maybe weren't heard last year but are ready this year. Are they going to be heard in this committee and included, or what's going to happen with
them? We're still working on that, Representative Norton, as far as a schedule and what we may or may not do. I believe we have approximately 200 bills now. 300 that are on our list. So could be some long nights. I'm not sure.
All right. Well I'm just going to encourage you while I have the floor to hear Representative Pearson's bill for the Rochester Airport so that it can conform to the federal requests.
Great. Thank you very much. If we look towards our meeting on Wednesday, we have a number of bills. House File 2014, Representative Petersburg, 3104, Representative Erdahl, 3175, Representative Anderson, and Representative House File 1112, Representative Norton, will be heard, and 1495, Representative Green. So we do have a full committee schedule that day. And before we adjourn, did we lose our... We lost our page again. Wanted to introduce Jim, you're here. Mr. Wilkin. We want to welcome you to the committee. Would you like to just come and introduce yourself to the committee members? Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Jim Wilkin, and I was a teacher for 34 years, and I'm here.
All right, short and sweet. We welcome you to the committee. Thank you. All right.
Good. We like that.
Anything else? We're done? Okay. Well, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.